This is The Brain, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Yes!
Hello, and welcome to episode 216 of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me, as the huge, is the Comic Concierge. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad. We're back at it again. Took a little bit of time to get this last episode out because I was I got the plague or something. I don't know. It was a weird sickness that I was sick for a long time, but it was never anything that was that crazy. Like, there was no fever, there was no flu, there was no like body aches. It was just like the longest cold I've ever experienced. So
yeah. Plus, I had things going on with my family, too, so it was one of those things where it's like, I couldn't record because of that going on, and then you got sick, so it was just right. A perfect storm. So
I think somewhere in there we lost a week that we didn't even know happened, so whatever the case may be, we're back at it, we're ready to cover some more Alfred Hitchcock as we continue to march through his filmography, finding more and more films to cover, and today's topic is the 1941 romantic psychological thriller film noir, as Wikipedia calls it, entitled Suspicion. So this is starring Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine. Joan Fontaine, who we just saw in Rebecca, and they are portraying a married couple. Also features a few other people that we may or may not get into. For her role as Lena, Joan Fontaine won the Academy Award for Best Actress in 1941. And as far as a plot goes, it kind of starts off with the meeting between these two characters, the falling for each other, the marriage, and then life as a married couple. I guess to not get into too much specifics, we'll get into that as we kind of continue. As we do with each episode, we kind of talk about our experience previously with this film and then kind of our first impressions. I believe for both of us, Dan, this was a first-time watch that we had no experience with, correct?
Yep, I have never watched this before, so it's a first-time watch for me.
Yeah, so first-time watch for both of us went in with I went in with no knowledge, no expectations, no even inkling of what this was about. I knew Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine was in it, and I knew Alfred Hitchcock directed it. So that is about all the material I went in to the movie with. Dan, what was your first reaction and response as you watched Suspicion?
So yeah, you make a good point there regarding like, you mentioned the genre and things like that, and going into this, and when I watch these movies, I try to know as least as possible when I watch them. You know, sometimes obviously with a movie like Psycho or other ones, it's impossible because they're so ingrained in pop culture, but Suspicion, not as much, right? So I really didn't know anything about it, and going into it, I just remembered when we were talking about different movies to go over, there was one that you mentioned was actually a comedy. And as I was going through this, as it started off with, I'm like, oh, must be this one. I'm like, a little weird name for a comedy, but you like you mentioned, it starts with this meet cute between Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine on a train as he goes into the wrong cabin, presumably can't pay for his ticket, and she helps him out, and you know, they kind of strike up this weird relationship, and then they come back together, and it felt like, oh, okay, this is gonna be like a romantic comedy of Cary Grant, who is like the fly of the seat of your pants type of person that doesn't really have a plan, with this more not cold, but very down to earth, very more strict Joan Fontaine. And it kind of starts off like that. I'm like, okay, but they get together really quickly and they're married. I'm like, well, where is this going? And then slowly the veneer of Cary Grant's character starts to go away, and you see like, oh, okay, this is Alfred Hitchcock still being Alfred Hitchcock. Well, I guess in this case, it was still really early in his career, so becoming Alfred Hitchcock, I guess you could say. And so actually, it was that made the experience, I think, so much more enjoyable, because I went in thinking it was something, and being able to kind of go on this ride with it of like, kind of almost the way maybe people felt when they saw Psycho for the first time, thinking it was the movie about this one character, and then that completely changes. And I rather enjoyed it. I thought it was really well layered in how it approached the character, Cary Grant's character, kind of giving you all these indications of who he is and making you, as the title would indicate, suspect him for all these different things, like all the little assets they put into it, you know, making him love detective novels, how he, you know he's not a great guy. You know, it's like gaslighting before gaslighting existed, the way he would kind of behave sometimes. But was he a murderer? Like, would he go that far? I just found it really well developed in that sense. Like, I think it had a really well-structured script. I thought the performances were really great. And we've talked about Cary Grant on this a lot. And this was the first time he worked with Hitchcock. And despite, you know, from what I heard that they did not get along at all making this movie, I thought he was fantastic in this. And as you mentioned, Joan Fontaine, who won the Academy Award, deservingly so. I still think her performance in Rebecca might be a little bit better, but she was the heart and soul of this movie for the most part. She's the one that was carrying most of it. So I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the experience, and I found it to be another Hitchcock film where I thought I became enamored with it because of the structure of the narrative. Like, there's some great shots in this, but it was really the performances as well as the structure of the story that really won me over.
You know, I think you touched on a couple things that are definitely noteworthy, and I'm trying to think of somebody besides Cary Grant that could have pulled off this role, because if you think about it, he's not, like you said, he's not a likable character as far as his actions, right? Like, there's a lot of things he's doing as a someone who's courting another person, as a husband, as a, like, there's just a lot of stuff that you shouldn't like about this character, like the way he goes about things, his work ethic, you know, there's different things that, like, there, it shouldn't work. And in order to pull this role off, you had to have somebody that had the presence and charisma to make it believable that somebody would still be infatuated with him, or still love him, or still be willing to stick around, even though he doesn't seem to have much else to offer. Like, he's living strictly off of charisma, personality, like, looks, whatever it might be. Like, this is not the person you take home to your mom and dad proud to, like, be like, he's not the person that survives the conversation with the father, right? Like, if a woman is courting someone and brings this gentleman home, and he proceeds to act like he does in this movie, reveal the resume that he has as far as his job and, like, his prospects for the future, like, no dad is gonna be like, yes, go ahead with this guy, he seems like a winner. Like, it just doesn't seem like he has that going. Like, he's going, it's like he goes out of his way throughout this whole movie to not have a job, not have anything that he's responsible for. Like, they're like the freeloading friend that just is somehow skating by life and getting all these things, but you don't know exactly how he's pulling it off because nothing adds up. So, like, I feel like there's not that many actors that could pull that role off successfully. I don't know. I mean, I don't have all of the actors of that time period, like, memorized or, you know, all that type of thing. But I'm even trying to think of, like, today's day and age, like, can a Brad Pitt type of person pull this off? Because they have to have that, like, movie star charisma. Like, I don't know if a Leonardo DiCaprio or a Brad Pitt or someone like that from our generation could have, like, pulled off this role, but I can't think of anybody else. Like, this, to me, is not something that Jimmy Stewart could have pulled off. It's not something that some of the other lead actors that we've seen throughout the Hitchcock filmography, to me, could have pulled off, which makes it interesting. And I watched recently a documentary about Cary Grant. I think it came out last year, possibly. And it makes a good point in that documentary how in this time period, there was a lot of the leading men were a lot more, strong is such a terrible word to use, but I don't know if gritty or strong or like
bravado.
They had that bravado, and they had like this thing that Cary Grant comes along and he is a completely different type of actor during this time period, because he does have that comedic touch. He does have that almost like a flamboyant nature to how he acts and portrays himself, with like this careless recklessness, like that's not necessarily like the guy that's going to be like the Godfather. You know what I mean? It doesn't have that persona to him. And so he was really breaking the mold as he comes onto the scene. And I feel like this is a type of film that was in role that was perfect for him to kind of use those types of acting skills and use that type of persona where it's kind of breaking down a little bit of like the macho man, I guess, stereotype, and just giving us a completely different thing. And it's not as obviously comedic as we're going to see in other films that we've already talked about. You know, it's not the comedy of North by Northwest or things of that nature, but under the, like, it's just right there under the surface. Like, yeah. It could be if he wanted to take it that way, but then obviously they add this whole kind of suspense thriller aspect to it where we're not sure who we can trust. And that's kind of an interesting thing that we've witnessed as we've gone through Hitchcock's filmography, is different films that we've covered where we know who's guilty and who's innocent. And it might be, you know, an innocent person that we know is innocent that's trying to like prove that, or different plays off of that. And here I think we get one where, as an audience, for one of the first times, we're not sure what the real deal is. Which to me separates this a little bit from any of the other things we've watched, unless I'm just forgetting something. Most of the time we're in on it and we know what the deal is. And in this situation, I feel like it was one of the ones that so far that we've watched where it's like we're somewhat along for the ride, not knowing if he's good or bad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And I was trying to think if there's any movies like it. I feel like it's been a while since we've gone through all these, but I guess maybe a little bit in something like Notorious, a bit, maybe not, I'm not sure. But yeah, this it certainly had more mystery to it, in the sense of, you know, with North by Northwest, there's mystery to it because we don't know what's really happening. But that's, you know, and similar to like something like Vertigo, for example. But with here, we don't know what's happening, in the sense of like, is this guy guilty or not? Like, where we know obviously he is not a great guy. He's a person who clearly, like you said, he's like James Bond if he was just a normal dude, because he's trying to just get by his wit and his charm, and, you know, hoping people doesn't, if he just moves fast enough, people won't really notice. And it's worked for him for the most part. But there, I think Cary Grant plays it really well too, because you get those moments, like that moment with him in the room with the portrait of her father. And like, there's just like the way he plays it, you wonder, like, is there a bit of a darker underbelly there? Like, you know, is, how far will he take this? You know, is there more of a, you know, psychotic element? But like, desperate is just simply, you know, he's a person who clearly can be desperate. So what would it lead him to do? And that I really enjoyed. And looking into this too, it was like the first time, as you know, Cary Grant was in a dramatic role like this. He was known for being more in the comedy and not a serious like actor per se. And to me, he showed so much range here. Sad that he never got, like, even after this, it seems like he never really got the notoriety when it came to like the awards, the accolades. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think it's deserved, because he shows so many different degrees here, but he does it in an understated way. And even like going back to certain scenes, like the probably the most famous scene in this is the milk scene, where he's carrying this glass of milk. It's beautifully shot. It's the best shot of scene of the entire thing. And most of that, you don't see his face, but it's in his body language, the way he's carrying himself. And I think, you know, that goes a long way. And like why I thought this was so successful, and having those thrills and not knowing the story and knowing Hitchcock, like, yeah, maybe like, he's known for murder, so we haven't had a murder yet, so who knows, maybe it's common.
Right. And I think the other thing that kind of struck me in this film is I believe that Hitchcock in this film does a great job of putting the little breadcrumbs down, but not in a way that makes it predictable, not in a way that makes it obvious. He's putting all these things down that, as a viewer, you're right with Joan Fontaine's character of, yeah, am I blowing this out of proportion? Is there a good reason? Do I take this at face value? Like, you're right there, and it's like, there's nothing crazy enough where you're questioning, like, okay, she should definitely be choosing a different course. Like, you're mm-hmm. with her every step of being like, okay, I can buy why she's sticking around, or I can buy why she's having, pun intended, I guess, why she's having these suspicions, but why it's not enough necessarily to act on it in a way. And like, so I think it's just like balancing and walking that line in a perfect way throughout this movie from a direction standpoint, or maybe even from a screenplay standpoint. I don't know who exactly you would give credit for this, but like, they do it in a very conscientious way of not going too far in one direction or the other, where like you're not faulting the characters for the decisions they're making so far. Cause a lot of it at first you're like, you want to believe, it's like you want to believe that Cary Grant's not as, I don't know if despicable is the right word, but you want to think that he's not like, not as bad as what everyone's thinking. You're like, you're waiting for him to have a good explanation for why this is happening or why he did this. And go ahead.
You want her to fix him. Like she can fix him, right? It's like, right. She can be the thing that gives him that opportunity. He'll get a job with her father or what have you, but you know, he just, and every step, and then you're like, okay, you have that moment where he sells the chairs and it's kind of awful and he kind of lies about it. Then he's able to correct it. So like, oh, okay, maybe this is actually, you know, something, maybe he's going to turn it around here.
Right.
Obviously, you know, he's not, because but still, but then he just finds another way. Like every step he takes, it's like, you know.
And it's interesting because at first you're like, okay, well, maybe he's just a little bit, has just a certain personality, right? Like this carefree, like, I don't care about anything. I'm just floating in the wind type personality. And you're like, okay, like, that's fine. People can be like that, but you know, we can kind of ground him and we got to find him a job, or we got to find him something that solidifies him as someone that's like contributing to society. Like, you know, mm-hmm. everybody wants to do. And then you're like, okay, but he sells these chairs, and okay, well, he's just a carefree person that also has a gambling problem, but that can be like addressed. And then it's like, well, he's just a carefree person that has a gambling problem and that may be capable of hurting somebody. Like, yeah. you keep adding another element, but like excusing it, like you're rooting for him to not be guilty of everything that these little breadcrumbs are saying that he is guilty of. So it's kind of a magical way that they weave that in a way that I feel like wouldn't happen today, because it would be way too heavy-handed in today's world, or it would be something that's a little bit more obvious or predictable, or it would be something that you're not buying Lena's character's actions and steps along with. And not just her, I think too, talking about another character that we could bring in here, Nigel Bruce plays a character named Gordon Thwaite, or they call him Beaky, who is Johnny Asgarth, Cary Grant's character's old friend, right? A friend from previous time in his life, who comes and visits them and kind of stays with them a little bit. And you have that interaction then between the two of them. And he adds this whole other layer, because he's outright telling her that, you know, he's not a honest, you know, forthright person, but then this guy's still friends with him and still like potentially going on these business ventures with him. So it adds like this whole other character that's like also balancing that line, because he's adding to the fact that she shouldn't trust him, but then at the same time adding to the fact that she should, because he's friends with him and he's stuck around with him. So it's like, I find his character kind of interesting as well. What did you think of the Beaky character?
Yeah, because he comes in almost like as comedic relief, you know, just his presentation, you know, feels like this larger-than-life character. You wonder, is he similar to Cary Grant's character? And, you know, because he seems to try to take advantage of every situation he's in. He seems like he's going to stay there for the weekend when he just met her for the first time. But then you have that scene, too, where he's drinking, you know, I forget what exactly it was, some sort of alcoholic drink. Mm-hmm. And he has that reaction where he's like coughing and nearly dying. And that's a great scene by Cary Grant, where like he just kind of just watches it happen. And again, making you wonder, A, it's kind of giving you insight to who he is as a character, but also giving you that curiosity regarding like, is he planning something here? Because we know he loves those detective novels. So is this something like he's testing out. And then as the story goes and goes on and Beaky plays a bigger role, you think back to that scene. So I think, as you mentioned, it does a really good job of building upon itself, like laying the groundwork. And it's like, you know, it's not the most complicated thing in the world, but I think it's just really well done. And how, like, everything matters. Like, every scene feels like it has a point. It's all connects, even if it doesn't seem like it at the time. So I thought his character was really important, and how he, one, added a bit of fun, but also, and how it was a reflection of Cary Grant's character and how important he became as the story, you know, moved on.
Right. And I'm not trying to necessarily close this out in any way, shape, or form, but I feel like we have to talk a little bit of, before we talk about, like, maybe some more overall thoughts of the film, we got to touch on the ending of this film. I guess that's, like, the most, I don't know if you'd say controversial or whatever, but it definitely critiqued a lot as far as how this film ends compared to how the novel ends, the studio's, I guess, quote unquote, the studio's interference versus what Hitchcock may have wanted the film to end. What was your take on kind of anything you read about the ending or how the film actually ended?
I will say it did catch me off guard when I, you know, going, you know, watching it, and I was like, okay, like, I was wondering, like, you know, is there like a Marvel after credits scene or something right. like that? Because it does come a bit out of nowhere. In reflection though, you know, it is called Suspicion, right? And once that suspicion is, you know, eliminated, I guess you would say, or, you know, or things kind of become more clear, I guess, in a way, that then the story is over there. So it does make sense. It is, like I said, abrupt. It does make it feel like a weird pacing in that sense, but I didn't hate it. It didn't completely ruin the experience for me. And I kind of could understand it in the sense of, like, what story is specifically saying and trying to tell, but it did feel like they didn't know how to end it, so they just kind of ended it there. Or, you know, there was just something that, I don't know, it felt like it needed a little bit more, or like it could have brought it together. Well, go ahead.
It seems like, it wasn't just like even two different endings. It's like there was at least three different endings it felt like they could have gone with, because in the novel, she drinks the milk, I believe, if I read that correctly, but then she has given him a letter or something to mail, and he unknowingly kind of puts that in the mailbox, even though it's her saying that he's killing her, basically, and that she's just, you know, resolute to just go down that path. So that's one ending, and then the other ending is what it seems like it's going to in this movie, where there's actually going to be a murderer, or both of them potentially dying, or at least one of them dying in this car ride at the end, which isn't like way number two it could have ended. And then there's obviously the third way, which they kind of flirt with the death in the car or the accident, but then, you know, continue to, I guess, go down this road together and see what happens in the future. So I don't know. I don't know which one I would have preferred. I do know that it was a little jarring on first watch. Like you said, it's like, you know, like you're saying, you're searching for the end credit scene, or you're searching for like there's gotta be something else, right? Like it's not just ending right here. So it is kind of tricky. And I guess, you know, obviously the studios and part of it is they didn't want Cary Grant to be unredeemable, because they're viewing him as, I guess, you know, the movie star, the hero that in that time period, I guess you couldn't play a bad guy then. I don't know. I don't know what the you know, I guess that's the thought process, but either way, I don't know if there was a right way out of it for Hitchcock and for the people involved in the movie.
I almost wonder if, like, I get people don't like ambiguous endings, but would it have made it a little bit stronger? Kind of thinking about, like, the ending of The Birds, right? That we just recently talked about. And I guess in a way it's similar to that, where that just kind of ends abruptly and you're kind of ready for it to go and it just kind of ends. But at least with this one, like I said, at least the story felt complete. Like, I didn't feel like it needed to give us more in the sense of, like, what it was going. But I do think it could have you can tell that the interference felt very transparent
right.
in that.
Right.
So
I almost would have rather than like them allude to that milk, let her drink it without us knowing whether he had or had not poisoned it, and then like somehow have that lead to an ambiguous ending where we don't know if he actually went through with something or not, like somehow weave that into the ending and just avoid the almost car accident type, or the almost whatever you want to call it, the car scene. Or you could just have him driving away and you don't know. I don't know. Like, I feel like there was a way to have an ambiguous ending without necessarily framing him as for sure. Like, it would still just leave us with a suspicion, right? Like, we still don't know if he did it or not. So maybe that would have been a fun way to go, but you know, I don't even know if the studio would have allowed that. So it's hard to say back in that time period with all the different things that they did or didn't allow. You know, we learned already in this filmography that, you know, at one point you couldn't flush a toilet on a screen. So you never know what's going on back here. Was there any other characters or moments that kind of stood out to you? Obviously we deal with Lena's family a little bit with her dad, who is the general, and her mom, and a couple other different things that happen along the way. Anything else that stood out to you from a scene standpoint or character standpoint?
One thing I can't believe we haven't brought up is like how he gives her like the worst nickname ever in Monkey Face. Like he's just gonna call her Monkey Face throughout. That's a choice, man. Like, again, like you said, like most people would not be able to get away with that if they did not have the charm of Cary Grant, because like that's just mean.
Yeah, I want to know who came up with that. Was that him improvising, or was that somewhere written down? That's like, call her Monkey Face. What?
Because also, it doesn't even make, like, she's a beautiful woman. Like, I don't even understand where that comes from. But, I mean, I think that's part of it, because he just, like, he knows she's beautiful, so he wants to insult her, or I don't know. You know, it's like being, it's like that little, it's like little kids who, like, you know, push each other when they like each other.
Right.
Kind of has that mentality.
But I also feel like it's almost like a control. Not, I don't know if it's a control tactic, but it's like a test almost. Like, I'm going to keep calling you this and you're going to stay with me anyways. I don't know. It's weird.
I think control is a good way to going it. Cause like that's him in this all the time. He's trying to control every situation he's in, even though he doesn't have it. You know, showing up to the ball with no invitation, you know, or saying he's going to come to situation, like, you know, meet her someplace and then never showing up and then sending a letter. I think he would be king of gaslighting. But I know gaslighting wasn't a thing back then, but that was something that he certainly was very much capable of. There was something I wanted to bring up, but I completely, I lost my train of thought.
What did you think of his interaction with her parents? What did you think of that kind of dynamic and how that played into it?
I was ready for her parents to kind of stand up for her a bit more. I was especially with her father having that military background. I was kind of ready for like that to happen. So it kind of did it. If anything, they just seemed to accept it because they didn't think she'd get married. So at least she's just out of the house, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I was ready for her parents to kind of play a bigger role than they ended up doing.
Yeah, they definitely kind of fade away from the movie, you know, about halfway through or even a little bit earlier, which is kind of interesting. I didn't have any other characters in my mind that really like necessarily stood out. Obviously, we have some people that he owes some debts to and some, you know, a boss that he's not working for anymore and a couple people like that, but I don't think any of them necessarily like stood out. We do see a couple familiar faces that have been in some of the other films, like Leo Carroll, who has been in Strangers on a Train and North by Northwest, shows up here as his employer and cousin, and then a couple different, you know, people that we've seen before. So it's kind of interesting to see those folks. But this film is interesting to me because my first reaction was somewhat negative, I'm going to admit. Like, I don't know if it was just because of the ending or what kind of threw me off, but I felt like at first watch, the movie gets over and I kind of had a bad taste in my mouth a little bit. Did that work or not? But the more I have thought about it, and we've had a little extra time to think about this one since we had a little bit of time here before this record, the more I digest it a little bit, and even like talking through this review with you, the more positive I get, the more time I spend with it. So it's one of those interesting films that I think like for me, grows with you as more time goes by and as you get to appreciate the, like, the little nuances that, yes, there's not anything like big and boisterous that happens necessarily. Like, mm-hmm. It's all about the details. It's all about the nuances. It's all about how these characters are playing off of each other and their decision-making along the way. So I don't know if it would work for everybody as far as, especially compared to some of the other films we've watched, which is maybe why we haven't heard it as much, you know, in as we've gone through with our different film circles and people that we talk and read about films with. Like, this one doesn't get brought up as much. And I wonder if that's a little bit why is like, it didn't necessarily respond to like people in general, but I feel like anybody that likes like the nuances and the details of a film would appreciate this. And especially the more they talk with people about it and the more they kind of digest it, if that makes any sense. And it did obviously do well from a critical reception at the time. I mean, it got whatever it was, 3 or 4 Academy Award nominations. And I believe it is received well. Like, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 97%, which is, you know, excellent. You know, we looked at a bunch of different websites and rankings and lists to try to come up with what films we were going to cover. And I looked at a bunch of them in particular, like IndieWire and Den of Geek and Independent Screen Rant, you know, just different things, Taste of Cinema, to try to like get a feel for like what are the ones that we have to watch. This one doesn't get listed on a lot of them. I think it's number 16 on IndieWire and number 14 if you look at like a ranker list, but a lot of the other lists leave it off. So it's kind of like a weird conundrum of a film where the people that see it seem to like it, but then it also gets forgotten in a way. I don't know what your take is overall on the film.
Yeah, I could see that in the sense of it's not as flashy. You know, it's not. It's a movie in a sense of you watch it. It doesn't feel like an Alfred Hitchcock film. It feels more like a Cary Grant and
Joan Fontaine.
Joan Fontaine movie, where, you know, it, outside of that one, like, he does have some good shots in this for sure. That, like, the milk scene, as we mentioned, where, you know, all he did was put a little bit of a light into the milk, but it works so well. It was, you know, just ingenious filmmaking there. I could see why it wouldn't be ranked amongst the best. As we mentioned, the ending isn't really strong. It maybe undercuts it a bit, and it doesn't necessarily have the infamous iconic scenes like a Psycho or North by Northwest, or, you know, it doesn't have the remarkable set design of something like Rear Window, where it's like, this does something that no other film has done, and it sets the bar. Like, I wouldn't say there's anything in the sense of like that with this. Like, it's not a movie that is so iconic or pushes the boundaries in any way. But I think it's an important movie in the career of Hitchcock, because one, financially, it did really well. It's like one of its biggest early hits in America. So it allowed all those other films to, you know, be successful. And two, I think it, in a way, like, it shows that he can do a movie like this, in the sense of like letting the actors be the story, letting the story be the story. And that's what I took away from it. Like, is it, would I put it amongst the best? I don't know. I mean, I've been ranking these as I go. Like, I still think there's some stronger films within this, and in the sense of, but I like, what I took away from it was just it not being as talked about, it not being as brought up, made it a bit of a better experience because of that for me, because I knew so little about it, and I was able to go in fresh and go in with and experience this movie in a way that, you know, they did when they first watched it, which is really hard to do with a lot of the different films. So I think that's probably why I might rank it much higher than some others, because I was able to experience it in that way, and it really worked with me on that, in that regard.
Almost like a hidden gem there for you, like something that you're not really realized is going to be there. And then you watch it, and you're like, hey, this is why didn't people talk about this one more?
Kind of like the opposite of Rope, where like that was, everyone told us that was the hidden gem, and I was ready for it to be the hidden gem, and it didn't work because of that. And this kind of worked the opposite way. So,
yeah, like you said, though, there's not quite as many maybe like Hitchcockian things in this film. We do have the Hollywood Blonde with Joan Fontaine. And we do have a Hitchcock cameo. I think he mails a letter at some point in the first hour or something like that.
I can blame. I didn't see it until I went back and looked for it, so I missed it.
Yeah, but other than that, like, there's not a ton. I don't think. I mean, it does still, like we talked about, it still does play a little bit with guilt versus innocence, which we've seen obviously portrayed a ton of times. Like, you know, whether it be the innocent person that is trying to escape capture or escape, you know, being framed for something, or in some situations where we've seen somebody that we know is guilty, and like we saw with Rebecca in a way, I guess, like we know that character is guilty of murder and coming to terms with it. So there's a lot of guilt versus innocence that I guess we do get that here, but there's not a mom relationship necessarily with the male character. I guess you do have it with Joan Fontaine's character a little bit. I didn't pick up anything as far as what we've seen with some of the male relationships in this film. I think it would be stretching to try to say that there was anything between, you know, Johnny and Beaky. I don't think that's the case at all. So like, I don't think you have that string coming through in this film, but a couple things here and there that I guess still are Hitchcockian, but like you said, I don't think this is a film that somebody watches and just knows that it was done by Alfred Hitchcock.
No.
If they went in without that knowledge.
Definitely. You could tell this was made before he had that power to kind of do what he wanted. I guess you could argue but as much as any director could at that time. But this is, you know, it being successful along with some other films let him get to that point where he was able to take bigger chances, take bigger swings. And even though he didn't take as many, I think the ones he did take ended up hitting really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is just coming 1 year after Rebecca. So it's kind of some of his first films from Sound Films in America, like you're talking about. So this is definitely early on. The only other film that we've covered that was prior to Rebecca and Suspicion was The 39 Steps, if I'm not mistaken. So, and that was obviously not made in America. So it's definitely interesting. And we're going to kind of continue going through this. And we're going to move 2 years into the future for our next film, which is called Shadow of a Doubt from 1943. I'm interested in this one for similar reasons like Suspicion. I'm going to go into this one with no knowledge whatsoever. I'm not even familiar with the stars of this film, who are Teresa Wright and Joseph Cotten. I know nothing about it, don't know the stars, don't know what I'm getting into. So again, this could be a hidden gem, or we'll see. Or maybe there's a reason why it's not talked about as much as some of the main ones. But have you seen Shadow of a Doubt at all, or what are you kind of going into with this one?
I know nothing about it at all. What you said is as much as I know. I knew the title of it, and that's about it. So I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, even looking through the cast list, which is, I, like you said earlier, I try not to go in with any knowledge, so I'm not looking at any plot synopses. I'm not looking at anything like that. But even looking through the cast list, I don't know if I recognize a single name. So it's going to be an interesting experience going through this Shadow of a Doubt, which obviously has been listed on some websites and some lists as a top Hitchcock film, which is why we're including it. So I'm definitely interested in going through that. Dan, what are some ways that people can keep in contact with content that you're putting out and other things that you're doing on social media?
Just search Comic Concierge on all the different platforms, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and you'll find me there.
All right. And you can search out myself at Optimus Solo, or you can search out the show at The Cinema Geeks, or you can look at look up the network that most of our stuff is featured on, the Geekcast Radio Network, and find all kinds of different geeky content covering cartoons and video games and movies and TV shows and comics and all kinds of stuff like that. So that does it for this episode of The Cinema Geeks. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to us talk more Alfred Hitchcock with 1943's Shadow of a Doubt.